Syria's obviously been in 12 years of conflict, so it's already been a dire situation for the last decade prior to this recent event last Monday with the earthquake. In the northwest part of Syria, which is an isolated pocket controlled by different groups, the population there has had desperate needs for the last few years, particularly with displacement, so people not having places to stay and they're permanently moving from one camp to another camp, and they need those basic things such as water, shelter, somewhere to sleep at night, something to keep warm, food to eat, medicines, etc. There's about 2.8 million people living in those conditions already before the earthquake. Then, of course, with what happened last Monday, was catastrophic again in this region, which is extremely fragile, with very little infrastructure, very little investment over the last decade. So people are suffering again. This is a crisis on top of a crisis. Of course, we've seen images, and it's clear that buildings have collapsed, and unfortunately, and many people have died. Our team that's on the ground, we have 45 Mercy Corps team members. On the first day when it happened, we had to check in with them. Were they safe? How are they affected? Thankfully, they were all safe. However, a few of them did lose their wives and children, which has been heartbreaking. And of course, we're doing our best to support them. But of course, it's not just our team, it's the wider communities that are also impacted. Our teams were traveling around doing what they could to support in those early hours. And they recalled going past piles of rubble and people standing next to that rubble, hearing their families struggling inside, but just being absolutely ill-equipped, not having the ability to do anything about it, and just standing there in despair. There's very little help that could come from the outside. So it's been Syrians once again
Yeah.
helping Syrians.
So that is absolutely heartbreaking. But what it is that Mercy Corps does is you move beyond the heartbreak to actually doing something to help those people. So, what is it that you're doing first off the bat for these folks? And maybe you can give us a few of the elements that are a part of your plan there.
Yes, absolutely. And in these kind of crises, the first thing is to take stock and find out what are those initial needs. So we're not just running in and handing things out. We're trying to identify what those problems are. That is step one. So very early on, we identified that water was going to be a critical issue. We provide water to camps where people are living in these kind of tented shelters. But the water supply, the infrastructure around it was damaged because of the earthquake. So soil and mud were seeping in. That means we have to go find other sources to make sure that we can bring clean water for people to use on a daily basis. Obviously, people were displaced from their homes, their houses had collapsed, or they were afraid, looking at the damage there, and didn't want to sleep there. So we were fortunate to have pre-positioned kits already for displacement. So that includes things like mattresses, blankets, solar lamps. So very early on, we started distributing those to people in need. And then we managed to buy some hygiene kits, which are things like toilet roll and soap, sanitary pads, just the basics that people would need. So that's been the first thing that we've been focusing on. And then since then, we're building our plan for the coming weeks because I do think this is going to continue to be a humanitarian disaster because of the nature of Syria and this isolated pocket, and it's very hard to get supplies in there. So we are concerned kind of for the next few weeks how we will be able to maintain support to those communities, and we're building our plans around that. So that includes things like how do we bring supplies in? How do we get cash to people so they can buy the things that they specifically need for that family? Also kind of shelter repair. So for those houses that are slightly damaged but will still work, can we seal them off against the elements? Because of course we're in the middle of winter, and that's been another disastrous kind of effect on this response.
Yeah. So what are the key challenges that you're facing to doing what it is that you need to do? What are the main things that are problems for you?
There's a few, and of course Syria has been a kind of political hot potato for a long time, and and the politics has been a challenge. The access of supplies is key, and those border crossings in the first few days were partly damaged by the earthquake, but also the border officials themselves. They were personally affected, so just the ability for those to function and operate was hard initially. However, they are open now, and the UN is able to start bringing in some supplies. But we also need the commercial sector. We need to be able to buy things inside Syria because that's the fastest way to get things to people. So we need the commercial supply routes to be functioning as well. I think the other biggest challenge, to be honest, and this has probably been one of the most frustrating things, is the international community's response in terms of funding. We have not seen the level of funding that you would normally expect for such a disaster to reach organizations like ourselves and others who are on the ground already. There's been a lot of hesitation, potentially because of the politics, but we need to see a step up on that and quite rapidly. Our teams need to be expanded. We need to hire more people. They're exhausted. And they're asking me, kind of, when are we hiring more people at it? And I'm saying, we're waiting, we're waiting. So that is probably one of the biggest impediments at the moment.
What about safety and security? One of the things that I heard fairly early on from a friend or colleague who used to work at the UN on the counterterrorism front is that in the very early stages of this conflict, a prison where there were some insurgents imprisoned, they actually escaped. And reminded me, this person, that this, ISIS has played a huge role in the everything there. So what about that? Is that an issue? Is that a concern?
So that specific issue is not such a concern in the Northwest. I mean, Syria is broken up into these different parts with different groups. And certainly in the Northeast, those kind of elements are sometimes a challenge. And I know that the various governments around the world are watching that very closely. In the Northwest, there are different groups that are operating there. And but as a humanitarian organization, what we're able to do is come in with very clear principles of how we operate, and we negotiate our way in. And it's very clear that we don't distinguish between groups. We don't want to be impacted by them, and that we're there to support those communities on the ground, those who are vulnerable, those in need. Once that negotiation is done and it's very clear, we're able to work with those communities. And I think when people are receiving help, they ought to make that working. They protect you. They make sure that we're not interfered with. So as humanitarians, it's keeping that interference at bay, keeping it out of our way so that we can do our job.
Do you have any, one of the things that militaries have, and you're not a military, clearly you're in many ways the opposite, but oftentimes you have organizations who have what they call force protection, people that look out for them while they are in some kind of situation. Do you have that kind of, do you have that access to that?
Actually, it's not something we need. Because of the work we do and the nature of the work we do, when we speak with the communities, as I say, they want the help, they appreciate the help. So we don't see those kind of threats to us. We don't need others watching our back. It's all about ensuring that discussion with the community, explaining what the projects are, demonstrating that we are credible, that we're bringing quality projects there to support them, then we're often welcomed in, and it's not something we have to be concerned about. So we're able to do our business.
Right. So, what assistance have you been able to deliver so far? You've told me what you needed to do, what's necessary there, but what have you been able to accomplish?
Yeah, so far, so as I said, we had those pre-positioned kits, and we've been able to distribute them. So that was something we could do very quickly. And we're working on procuring more of those kits at the moment. We do need to kind of work with suppliers and make sure that there are enough in the supply chain to deal with that. So there's the hygiene kits, those shelter kits. We're evaluating at the moment what the possibilities are for food. So that's kind of the next thing. A lot of people are saying they can't access food or the prices are extremely high. So we're looking at working with bakeries to build their capacity. Maybe they need some refurbishment because of the earthquake to get functioning again. So some of those very basic things. So food is another element, and as I mentioned before, water is probably one of the most critical things as well. So making sure those boreholes where we access the water are fixed quickly, so that we can maintain that water supply. Those are currently what we're working on, and then further down the line, we'll be looking at things such as rubble removal, and that's kind of a cash for work program, where clearly there's got to be a huge clear up from this disaster. So we'll have community members coming in helping to remove that rubble, but we do a cash for work program, which enables them to have a bit of employment. It puts money in their pocket, they can provide for their families, and at the same time we're clearing up from this disaster. So it has a dual kind of benefit that comes out of that. And then particularly cash is a very dignified way for people to respond, because each family is going to have its own needs. It could be the family needs to buy medicines because people are sick, or they don't have enough food, or they need to pay rent for somewhere else to stay because they've lost their home. But it gives them the choice, and it means it's more targeted rather than just always doing kind of a blanket response.
Kieran, you guys have been there since pretty early on in this, and I wonder if you could just share with the audience, what kind of days you have. Give us a sense of a day. I know they have to be really long days and nights. Just give us a sense of what you're up against, each day.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we have a few teams involved. We have a team on the ground inside Syria, and then we have a team based here in Jordan that manages that remotely because of the access issues. The first thing in the morning, to be honest, is we have an incident management team that was formed right at the beginning on day one, a couple of hours after the earthquake, where we pulled key personnel together, and they are 100% dedicated to managing this response. We then obviously once connected with the team on the ground. So my day at the moment starts with that management meeting, first of all, where we set what's the plans ahead, what are the issues, what are we tackling, how do we overcome problems, and setting that course. And then, to be honest, from that point on, everybody goes to their teams and they're just implementing, they're communicating. As an organization, we have to obviously talk internally. But the day is, it's a kind of a hectic day of communication. It's emails, it's messages. It's phone calls and just trying to network and coordinate together so that our response is rapid, it's relevant, and it's having an impact. And it's kind of 7 in the morning till 11 p.m. at night, barely chance to stop. And but we'll keep going. And hopefully we'll bring in extra support to kind of relieve people, because we want to make sure that we look after our teams, particularly those in northwest Syria.
One more thing. Do you have any issues at all with connectivity, considering trying to reach others in another country? And certainly we know that the infrastructure in Syria is not that good. And explain how that works. Do you have those issues to deal with as well?
Yes, particularly since the earthquake. I mean, these things kind of happen all the time wherever we are in the world. But because of the earthquake, there was some of the infrastructure was damaged. Electricity has been a problem, and we are also concerned about fuel shortages, which impact on these things because a lot of things are run on generators and such. The internet was down because some of the internet is also coming from Turkey, and of course, Turkey was affected as well. So we mostly use the internet to reach with our teams. It's been intermittent. Our office, thankfully, was not affected by the earthquake. We had it checked by an engineer. It is We can use it, and at the office we have a generator so that we can create our own power. And as soon as that was, we were basically approved to use the building. The team has been using that as a base, and it has improved, but it's still intermittent. And then, of course, the weather also has an impact on this because a lot of it is wireless. So when it's been snowing, that's when it becomes more of a challenge. But we are heavily reliant on good communications, but thankfully we've kind of managed to keep it going.
Kieran Barnes is country director for Mercy Corps. He's based in Amman, Jordan. JJ Green, WTOP News.